I always go by this parking rule that my dad always said, that first you should drive by the door of the place you're heading. Because you never know, you might find parking there, and you don't want to park someplace 10 blocks away thinking you're not going to find parking there.
This is Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we're talking about downtown parking on today's show. Just to get a feel for the issues going on there, we sent our producer Sylvia Maria Gross and reporter Laura Ziegler downtown at lunchtime to clock how long it would take for them to find a parking spot. Okay, they were also hungry for lunch.
So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to drive by the door at 15th and Grand, which is where we're going for lunch.
Okay, I'm ready.
And are you timing us, Laura?
Oh, no, I'm not. Okay, go.
Okay. It might not be that hard to park right now.
That's true.
I mean, some people told me that it is hard at lunchtime, like around Power and Light, so.
And this show is about parking downtown.
It is about parking. Like, should we keep building more parking, particularly more surface parking, or should we try and make downtown dense to make it a more, like, engaging and exciting downtown? So I think, wow. I think we're going right here. And looks like this parking is all available.
Okay, so the Grand Parking Challenge of 2015 was a bust. There were three open spaces right in front of the restaurant. But parking downtown, especially in the crossroads, is a real issue, and it raises questions far bigger than how far away you're going to have to park when you head to a restaurant, hair salon, or art gallery. The parking conundrum raises questions about the very character of our downtown, and for business owners, it could be a question of success or failure. So let's start talking about parking. Call 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. Thomas Moorfield, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. You're a downtown resident and an urban planner on staff at the architecture firm BNIM. And I understand that parking is kind of your thing. Is that right?
Yes. For everything that happens downtown, it seems like parking is an important part of it.
I happen to be kind of obsessed with parking myself, but not so much that I've made a career of thinking about it. What interests you about parking?
Well, I think that, if you look at what's happening downtown right now, there's a lot going on. It's really a downtown in transition. So if you look at new development, or you look at street improvements, or you look at investments in transit, if you look at the city's economic development strategy, and even if you look at how things are changing in terms of where and how people like to live and how businesses make decisions on where to locate, all of those issues are really transforming downtown right now. It's evolving, and each one of those is very directly related to parking. Parking comes up every time you begin to think about that. And so I think it's a really important topic for downtown because it represents this sort of growing up that downtown Kansas City is doing.
When you say growing up, how would you characterize that?
Well, I guess, I moved to downtown in 2006, and that's not so long ago. But even then, it was a situation where most of the activity was during the workday and on the weekends or in the evenings. The streets were pretty empty. The parking lots were pretty empty, and there wasn't a lot going down. And downtown's very different today, and it's sort of evolving from a place where you drive everywhere all the time to a place that's more active and walkable and dense and urban. And that means how all of our infrastructure systems, including parking, all of those have to respond and change and evolve to those new conditions.
Generally speaking, what's at stake when a city makes decisions about parking?
Well, if you think about every parking space you have, particularly in downtown, everywhere that you have devoted to car storage is a piece of ground that is not a restaurant, that is not a new downtown loft, that is not a business. It's not a new park or cultural amenity. It's
right.
Not...
People don't go downtown just to park.
Right, right. And so for everywhere that we lock up with parking, that's economic potential lost. That's tax base loss. And in my opinion, makes us less competitive because we're creating an environment that's less desirable for people to come.
So the issue here in Kansas City, as far as I understand it, is surface parking. Can you define surface parking for us?
Well, you know, surface parking is basically a flat lot with nothing on it, but maybe some pavement and a gate, you know, to charge you for parking. But we have a lot of structured parking as well. And that's also part of the problem because it's the same story. It's more dense and it's more expensive, but it's just as much of a dead zone.
We heard earlier in the show that land use in the Crossroads is 50% surface parking. Is that unusual for a downtown district?
I think many major cities over the course of the past several decades have gone through a similar pattern where the introduction of freeways or flight to the suburbs and a variety of factors have impacted the downtown environments and created a lot of surface parking areas. So I think it's a similar story, but I think that downtown Kansas City is up there in terms of the degree of the challenge.
How was the city originally built, this part of the city? I mean, have these empty spaces increased, or was that part of some grand vision?
Well, downtown Kansas City was here before cars were here, and it was designed around a different way of getting around. At first, walking around, and as the streetcar and other transit systems evolved, developed around those sorts of transit modes. And when the automobile was introduced and major highway improvements were constructed and we saw not only blocks and blocks of downtown destroyed to bring these new highways in, which at the time were seen as a great economic boon for downtown. But, you know, I think the verdict's a little bit different today. But at the same time, everyone was driving to all of their driving to go shopping, driving to go to work. And there had to be space to put all those cars. And so, you started to see buildings go away and surface lots pop up.
What are the zoning laws when it comes to parking for businesses in the Crossroads in particular?
Well, they're evolving. You know, traditionally, cities would require that whenever there's a new development, you would have to require a minimum number of parking spaces.
So like a new business that would have customers.
Right. And so the historical concern is about the nuisance. If we don't require a certain number of parking spaces, all of those customers are going to park on side streets or in front of someone else's business or in front of a home. And that's a problem. And so we have to require a certain number of spaces. But I think that's line of thinking is evolving. And
why? What was wrong with that line of thinking?
Well, I think there's a variety of factors. One is that parking in downtown and other mixed-use environments works a little bit different than in other places. For example, because downtown is mixed-use, you may have a parking lot that's very close to an office and to an apartment, right? And the office needs the parking during the day, during work hours. But when the apartment needs it, it's the opposite. When people come home from work, they want to park there at night, right? So that single space can serve both of those uses. And the other thing that downtowns have that maybe other places don't is that there's an opportunity for someone to park one time and make many different trips.
We've got a call that I want to go to because it relates to some of what you were just saying about different uses for parking. Let's go to Jeff in Quality Hill. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. I wanted to talk about a problem of people not following directions in relation to parking. Our apartment complex is a few blocks away from Bartle Hall and Municipal Auditorium. And when there's events there, there are two extremely large surface lots that are close to Bartle Hall, as well as one underground near Bartle Hall, and also within a couple of blocks. And also there's free street parking as well as metered street parking and additional garages. But in spite of all of that, we get people who park on our surface lot right next to our apartment building, even though it's clearly marked tenant parking only, which results in the fact that there's insufficient numbers of spaces for our tenants, all of whom are either elderly or disabled. So this is a big problem that people do not read the signs that say tenant parking only, tow away zone. And it really creates a great hardship for our tenants.
Let's hear from our guest on this. We've got some other guests who we'll be turning to shortly, but let's stick with you, Thomas Moorfield, for now. What do you hear in this? Like, a lot of the focus can be, you know, emphasizing people who are trying to come downtown to patronize a business, but there are people who live here.
Right. And the issues are different, right? So for someone who lives here, for a resident, we see how much parking there is, that there's a lot and there, you know, probably too much. But for a visitor, they're coming and the perception is different, that, you know, they're not sure where to park. They're not sure if it's okay to park in a particular place or not. Part of the solution is managing all of the parking better so that there's enough spaces in the right places. But another part of it is doing better about making parking easier to find and use. And that can be through signage and wayfinding. That can be through marketing efforts for other things the Downtown Council and other groups are doing. And it can also be things using new technology to help people understand where parking's available and where they should go and help them to plan their trips better.
When I think about a healthy downtown, I picture lots of people out on the sidewalk, and I suspect that isn't a picture you paint by making it super easy for people to park right next to their destination. In cities like New York, people are out walking and taking subways, at least in part because those options are more convenient than traveling by car. Does abundant parking kind of work against public transportation and pedestrian emphasis?
I think they can work together. I really do. I think the issue with parking is that we want to use what we have efficiently so that we don't build too much. That's part of it. But the other is that we want to design well. We want to design so, for example, a parking garage isn't a dead zone between two different uses, or we want to design in a way where we can create great quality public spaces and amenities and have transit work well and have people make it easy to walk. But that doesn't mean that you can't serve automobiles in a way that works well, that's integrated. But it really takes good design and a thoughtful approach.
I want to bring Rick Usher in on this discussion. Rick is with us from City Hall. He's the assistant city manager. Hi, Rick. Thanks for being here today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What are your thoughts about this issue?
Well, I think, you know, all of Thomas's comments are right on that. And I know we're talking about parking. You just brought up transit. The ATA has served us well downtown. I've worked at City Hall a number of years. I rode the bus for 11 years. And, you know, so transit works. Also, we now have Bike Share KC, so biking is a big option to get around downtown. The event parking, it really comes down to easy, convenient, and free parking. Those are all really not words related to each other well. And so we see.
What do you mean by that? Why don't they relate to each other well?
Well, free and convenient. Can't work in a downtown parking model. You know, Sean and I, we were talking about parking in other cities, and the distance from your venue is going to determine the price of your parking. So really what we see, and maybe back to the caller's question, people are seeking the most convenient space, not necessarily looking for the best price. We see a lot of walking downtown from on-street spaces in your venues.
The Sean just mentioned is the Vice President of Business Development for the Downtown Council of Kansas City. Hi, Sean.
Good morning.
So can you explain, it sounds like there's some discussion about how Kansas City compares to other cities in this respect. What light can you shed on that?
Well, certainly. When you think about other markets, Boston, Chicago, you don't see surface parking lots in the Central Business District. And those are cities that have evolved over the years. And Kansas City, as much like those cities, were in the evolving stages. Just a few years ago, in the 80s and 90s, there was strong economic flight from downtown. Blighted buildings were abundant. People were moving to the suburbs. In the past few years, since 2003, there's been $6.5 billion worth of redevelopment to rebuild downtown. And to whenever you see a surface parking lot, it's really a development site that's an interim surface parking lot.
Someday, wait, what do you mean by that?
Well, someday that surface parking lot should be built upon, and that's the development of downtown.
So that's kind of like a life cycle. There's some historic building that was once vacated. In its abandoned state. It was raised to make room for parking to support a business in an adjacent building. And then someday, when those businesses are really thriving, some new structure grows up where that surface parking is?
Right. If the historic building can be saved, that's great, and redeveloped, that's a wonderful use for it. Downtown has gone through cycles. When you look at the Crossroads area, that was an originally a low-rise industrial sector where people in the 20s, 30s, and 40s rode the streetcar into work, worked their 10-hour shift, and then headed back home on the streetcar. There was never parking that was a component of that. Now you have in that area a mixed-use environment. You have industrial still. You have residential. You have retail. You have restaurants. And you have galleries. And each one of those have independent and very distinct parking requirements. Parking requirements that weren't part of that original design back when it was laid out. And remember, our streets are as platted in 1850.
What do you do about the fact in the Crossroads, it seems like there is not really a consistent number of people trying to be in that place at once? Like on First Fridays, the number of people who want to be in the Crossroads far exceeds the number of people who want to be there on a Sunday afternoon. And then somewhere in the middle is lunchtime on a weekday. I wonder, Thomas Moorfield, what can you say about that? How do you juggle that at any given moment, the number of people you're trying to accommodate can be wildly divergent?
Well, I have two thoughts on that. The first is that we probably shouldn't be designing our cities for just a few dates a year. We should be designing our cities to work well most of the time and see how we can accommodate events when they happen. But the other aspect is that, you know, we really need a parking policy and a parking standard that respond to demand. So pricing of parking or pricing of any scarce resource is a time-tested, proven method to ensure that there's supply when people need it, where they need it.
Kind of economics 101 there?
Yeah, absolutely. And so if there's a place where more people want to park and there's fewer spaces, that's where that you can increase the price of the parking until it's more available. And that makes sure that the restaurant owner has a parking space available for their customer. That makes sure that a visitor who wants to park right up front can. And that helps to distribute the parking load to other areas that are being underutilized so that we are not wasting land.
But in Kansas City, where there are suburbs so near to downtown and even sort of like semi-urban areas so close to downtown where you can really just drive right up, will downtown remain competitive with those other districts if parking costs money?
I think that's a really interesting question. And what we're seeing is that it is precisely downtown's urban character, its ability to provide amenities and an experience that is attracting businesses and is attracting residents. And it's part of why the city's investing in the streetcar. It's part of why the city's seeking creative and high-tech industries. And they are in order for the city to be successful in that, it has to provide that quality urban environment that people are looking for.
So far, you've been speaking mostly as an urban planning professional, but you mentioned you're a downtown resident. What issues does parking raise for people like you who live downtown, who see it at all different hours, all different days of the week? What might other people not realize about how parking issues affect those who live downtown?
Well, I guess there, I would definitely say there are diverse perspectives on parking and how it should work downtown. So I can't speak for everyone. But I think one thing that maybe people don't realize is that every parking lot downtown, if you're a resident, if you're walking around, that's part of your experience of the place. So when half of the River Market and the Crossroads are parking, when there's 50 blocks in the downtown loop devoted to parking, those are spaces that are unpleasant to be, that are less active, that don't provide opportunities, and that limit the potential for people to live well and pursue economic opportunity.
Central Standard is going to take a break. When we return, we'll learn more about what's at stake with downtown parking. Do we Kansas Cityans just expect too much parking-wise? Or is added parking needed to help downtown businesses thrive? Call 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're talking about the sexiest of all sexy things. Of course, I'm referring to parking. So far this morning, we've been hearing from urban planner and blogger Thomas Moorfield for the most part. And now I'd like to reintroduce Sean O'Byrne and Rick Usher. Sean is the Vice President of Business Development for the Downtown Council of Kansas City. Hi, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
And Rick Usher is with us from City Hall. He's the Assistant City Manager. Hi, Rick. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Gina. Good to be here.
So, Rick, what are the current questions you're grappling with at City Hall when it comes to downtown parking?
It's really a paradigm shift that we're in right now from going from, as Thomas said, he moved downtown in 2006. I've lived downtown since 2000. And up until 2006, I could walk my dogs off leash after 6 p.m. anywhere downtown. And today, I can't do that because downtown is so vibrant. So parking, I believe it's kind of a mirage that it's a problem. Because really, I think your opening segment was a parking success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That the parking is becoming available, and we've worked closely with the Crossroads Community Association and other groups through focus groups that we've had to try to make that parking with hours that drive customer traffic and move employees off street or onto transit. And really can't stress the use of transit and biking enough in this conversation.
When you stress those things, what is it that – how do they play in?
Well – we're seeing big growth in the residential population downtown. We're seeing more people in meetings who speak up and say, I don't have a car, or I walk to work, or I bike to work. That's the paradigm shift I'm talking about, that we have a new population downtown that sees no need for expanding the number of parking spaces that we have.
Have development decisions leading up to this moment contributed to that, or is that an unforeseen, just socially driven thing?
No, I think we have to give credit to the Greater Downtown Area Plan that the city has implemented. The area plan covers the river to 31st Street and State Line to Woodland. We have an implementation committee that brings downtown stakeholders together to talk about all of the plan recommendations for the downtown. But what's really been great about the implementation steering committee meetings is at our year-end summary, Public Works, Water Services, City Planning, Parks and Recreation present on the projects that they built that year. And it was a showcase of transit, biking, walking initiatives that were outlined in the plan.
We've got a call from someone who wants to talk about this very issue, this biking issue, Luke in the Crossroads. Hi, Luke.
Hi. I think we need to add more infrastructure, like bike lanes, and businesses should provide bike racks. But the biggest thing, most importantly, I think we need to grow as a community and culture and take ownership and ride the bike, not always get in the car.
So, this might sound a little far afield, but how is bike parking downtown? Or do you find lots of places to put your bike if that's how you're traveling?
There is definitely enough, but that's really only because no one's riding bikes. You know, if a lot more people rode a bike instead of driving a car, we would definitely need more bike racks all over the city.
So we could find ourselves having this conversation about bike racks at some point, although they take up a lot less space. What about this idea, though, about a character of downtown and community as part of what defines downtown, population as part of what defines downtown? Thomas Moorfield, how does parking play into that?
Well, I think the caller touched on something really important, which is that, you need to create an environment or a culture where it feels comfortable and safe to do something other than drive, right? So that really impacts how we design our buildings and how we design our streets. If we provide for that infrastructure and make it safe and comfortable, people can use transit or walk or ride their bike, and more people will do that, and there's a lot of studies that show that. And we can do that in a way that integrates with parking as well. Parked cars can protect a cyclist from fast-moving traffic. And so there's a way that all of these can work together if we're thoughtful.
You have a blog, urbanangle.net, and on it you've provided recently 15 recommendations for parking in Kansas City. One of the things that you recommend is parking districts. What is the concept there of parking districts? Because we've been talking about the overall goal of parking, but there are lots of models for how to provide it.
Well, this is one idea that I think the city is beginning to explore, but we could be doing a lot better. And the idea is that, as I mentioned before, parking is most efficient if we can share it. If one use can use it at part time of the day and another use can use it another, that works better. If there's areas where there's high demand and other areas where there's low demand, there's strategies to redistribute those. But all of those depend on a shared public pool of and parking supply. And so a parking district is an idea where the city or another managing entity can begin to organize parking spaces together, manage them together, market them together, and deal with site-specific supply and demand issues in a strategic way.
So where would this parking district go?
I think you could explore the idea of parking districts anywhere where you have compact mixed-use discrete district. So I could see a parking district in the River Market.
Can you untangle that for us a little bit in case we've got some listeners who are not urban planners?
Sure. So think about an area where there's a collection of destinations and uses that are all kind of working together. So where if you park anywhere in the district, you could be reasonably expected to walk to a destination in the district in a way that is comfortable and inviting.
What about this distinction between parking and free parking? Because I think that that's getting mixed up here, too. It's not just that people want to park. It's that they want to park without paying for it. And Rick Usher, can you chime in here?
Well, this goes back to parking studies that we've had that have shown there's 50,000 parking spaces in the downtown area, and they're a combination of pay lots, garages, and then on-street parking. What we're seeing, I'll use the Arch District Garage at the Kauffman Center as an example. It's $7 to park in that garage on event nights. There's 1,000 spaces in that garage. And over the last 2 years or so, we have rarely been sold out in that garage. But I know from walking my dogs at night, I see people in tuxedos and evening dresses walking three blocks because they can park free in the crossroads or along Washington in the evening. So it's more a factor of wanting, the convenience in those cases are I don't have to pay $7. If I want to get into the Kauffman Center quickly, I pay $7 and I find a great parking space.
Sean O'Byrne, you represent business owners in this area, and you're looking out for what's going to keep these places that make downtown worth visiting healthy and strong? What do you hear in what Rick just described about these different options for downtown parking, the public, the private, the free, and the paid parking?
Right. Well, as I was listening, I also thought it's interesting that all three of us are downtown residents. We all live downtown. We all work downtown. So there's two market segments that are being represented above and beyond just the downtown council side of it. When you think about the free parking aspect of it, and as it relates to your street deck, you got to be careful, whereas free parking in many cases becomes employee parking. And when you're a retailer or have a restaurant, there's two people that could take that parking space. It could be your employee or it could be a customer. So when you look at the different distinct neighborhoods, the River Market, the Central Business District, Crossroads in the greater downtown, River Market traditionally had fewer parking meters. Crossroads had fewer parking meters. Central Business District's pretty much metered throughout. And meters aren't made to be a fundraiser for the city of Kansas City. What it really is set up to do is to regulate that inventory. So if there's a 2-hour on there, you're in hopes that that customer comes in, does the business that they need to do, moves their car or ends their transaction and frees it up for the next person.
So that's funny that you think of that as regulating inventory, because when we're all driving around and trying to go places, I don't know if we see ourselves as filling a role that's related to inventory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it is. I mean, it really is. I've got to give a lot of accolades to the city of Kansas City. They've taken this very seriously. They've created the Parking Transportation Commission that I sit on. They started the Parking Policy Review Committee, which I'm the chair of, and they've taken a very hard look at this. And in those commissions and committee meetings, we've done a lot of outreach to those three distinct groups. And in one of the meetings, there was a gentleman who was representing a very narrow section of the different divisions, and said, "You've got to understand that parking is an amenity to be shared by everyone." Well, that's exactly right. But it's by residents, it's by retail, it's by office, it's by tourists, and it's by industrial. And each one of those, as I mentioned, have very distinct parking needs and very few times overlap.
Yeah, if I could add, and Sean touched on it a bit, metering parking spaces drives responsibility in using that space. If there's a meter, then I know I got to go back, or it's more likely I'm going to get a ticket. The key to the success of all of our parking and transit strategies is enforcement. So back to the caller's issue of event goers parking in their lot that has signs that says it's a tow zone, then call that tow company, tow those cars. Enforcement will change that behavior. And we've seen that occur downtown, where we've put three-hour zones in. Employees are now moving off the street. We're seeing more requests from property owners to share off-street parking. And we've heard from business owners that the new parking hours of operation are enhancing their businesses. And I got to tell you about Manny's restaurant. They had two streets of unregulated parking. You could park on these streets, 21st and Wyandotte, as long as you wanted, no threat to ticket or towing. We changed those to three-hour zones prior to the holidays, and they reported one of their best years ever because their customers know there's a space out front. And so it really ties to turning tables as quickly as you're turning parking spaces. There's a direct correlation.
Sean O'Burton, what do you want to add here?
And as you talk about free parking, you know, from a consumer standpoint, the idea of having free parking is great. And there's ways to do that. For example, the Country Club Plaza, you assume you have free parking. But when you're parking in the garages and you make a purchase at the plaza, on your tax is a TDD, a Transportation Development District, which puts a tax onto the purchase that you did that helps offset their parking costs. So whereas you think the only people that are getting free parking on the plaza are those who aren't buying anything at the plaza.
So I want to ask this question because so much of this conversation, the reason we're having it, it seems to me, is because our downtown is in a state of transition. How would you characterize that transition? And would you say that these parking dilemmas are kind of growing pains? Thomas, I want to start with you.
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to describe it because I think there's an expectation about how you arrive or travel to a place today. And as downtown becomes more dense and as walking and biking transit are more available, the way downtown works is changing. And so over time, Kansas City will evolve. But we're at that moment where a new development project comes in and it takes away parking that we had before, or a new activity comes in and it changes the dynamic and we haven't seen a lot of that in recent years. And so as downtown succeeds, it's an issue we grapple with more and more.
I'd say we are definitely in a transition. It's a positive change. Downtown is growing extremely rapidly, but businesses are impacted right now because of the streetcar construction. So while the streetcar this time next year will be a pedestrian accelerator helping people move around downtown without taking their car, at this point, it's really impacting businesses. And we've had a construction mitigation team going with a number of downtown interests. We've kind of seen the lunch mobs that go down and help businesses that are impacted by the streetcar construction.
Could it be easy? I mean, my takeaway from what you've just said could very easily be we just have to have patience. But Sean, from the standpoint of a business owner, how much patience is realistic as far as, you know, if I just wait, we're going to be looking at a downtown with the density to support the business and the public transportation to get people here from the outside, but how long can a business wait before those things become a reality?
Kansas City's been an underutilized market. Downtown Kansas City's been an underutilized market for years. As I mentioned, since 2003, there's been $6.5 billion worth of reinvestment. Right now, there is $1 billion worth of development that is going on. There's 20,000 residents. From what we see with the Downtown Council and the International Downtown Association, you need 40,000. So we are just back in the game as far as development is concerned. So as Rick mentioned with this paradigm shift, those are the shifts that we have to have in our mindset as it comes to parking. If that's for a retailer, that means that perhaps he should talk to his employees about providing parking somewhere in a reserved lot somewhere, or providing bus passes, or encouraging them to ride the streetcar or a bike, or walk.
I want to get back to that shortly, but we've got a couple of calls. I want to go to them now. They've called 816-235-2888, and you still have a chance to weigh in. Should there be rock star parking for all, or is it time to take the bus? You tell us. 816-235-2888. Let's talk to Teresa in Lee Summit. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. So I have lived in San Francisco, or I did live in San Francisco for 10 years, and I spent a year in Florence, Italy. And then I have also lived in Austin, Texas, and I love cities. And so I want to tell you that without a doubt, downtowns are so worth it to go visit. But I'm at a place now in my life where I am, you know, in the suburbs, and it's where I belong because I have children, and it's, for me, it's easier. But I want to talk to you about being a visitor to Kansas City as frequently as we can. Even once a week, we love to come in. And I think about parking that if I have a really quick errand, I would love to be able to just stop and park in front, go in and get what I need and come out, and I would be willing to pay for that. And when I want to come and just spend the afternoon or the morning, I'm happy to park 4 blocks away, 5 blocks away. And I think that would, to attract more people, it would be great to have that be free parking. The tall, you know, parking structures that aren't necessarily convenient, but you're going to have a great city experience, I think should be free. And the closer, more convenient, you should charge because the city's worth it to come visit. That's just what I wanted to share.
Thanks, Teresa. So lots of interesting ideas to follow up on there. First of all, that trade-off of proximity and cost is an idea that, Rick, you've brought up already in this conversation, but the idea that it's worth it to pay to come to the city, that if that parking is already taken up either with free or with private parking, which you can't get access to even if you were willing to pay for it, or unlimited parking where there's a car out on the street seemingly infinitely, you just can't get access to that spot even if you're willing to pay for it.
Yeah, and we're trying to open up more spaces as shared parking, avoid building more spaces. One thing I don't think we touched on was that in the streetcar corridor within a block east and west of the line, new construction is not required by the zoning code to provide off-street parking. So that is market-driven. I would have to comment on the statement that suburbs are where you go to raise your children. Sean and I, we've raised our kids downtown. We have the Crossroads Academy School downtown that brings how many kids?
600.
600 kids downtown. So downtown is a great place for kids. And
in other cities, people raise children downtown as just a normal course of behavior. Where do you think we have that idea in Kansas City that isn't viable?
That's probably a topic for a whole other show, but there are all kinds of options for schooling your child, and downtown is, I think, an incredible environment for kids to be raised. The Crossroads Academy experience has been pretty amazing. They're looking at the streetcar as their field trip to Union Station in Science City.
Sean, what are the economics of getting parking as part of the development of a new business or a new cluster of businesses? What are the dollars and cents of this?
It is without a doubt the hardest portion of any kind of development deal. Compared to the suburbs where you have greenfields where you can park anywhere and land prices are much lower, in your central business district your land prices are higher and it demands density to make it work. Structured parking, multi-level, is about $20,000 per space. And the rates and the
Kansas City. For the business owner who wants to create that structure,
correct.
Right?
For anybody, if they want to build a parking structure, it's going to be $20,000 per space to build that thing. And then the rents that you get on it are anywhere between $95 to $105 per space per month. Those don't work out. The math doesn't work out to make those economics work. So it's always a tough situation for a developer to put in. So for the development aspect of it, the change in mindset where you put in multiple uses of transportation help out.
What is the difference long term? I mean, what is the real greater benefit from your perspective? Lots of adjacent parking, and I'm talking about for a business, or greater density, which parking kind of contradicts.
I'd say greater density with the new concept of multimodal transportation options, the utilization of buses, the utilization of the streetcar, the utilization of bikes, walking. You need to have all of those combined to make a successful downtown.
We've got to take one more break this morning. When we return, we'll wrap up this parking discussion, and then we'll share the story of Kansas City drummer Zach Albetta, who packed his bags and left for Los Angeles. What could LA give him that Kansas City couldn't? That's coming right up. Don't go away. You're listening to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Downtown Kansas City is at a crossroads. Construction, new businesses and amenities, public transportation, and tied up in all of it is something so seemingly mundane we might not fully appreciate its implications. Parking. Our guests this morning are BNIM's Thomas Moorfield, who blogs about city planning at urbanangle.net, Assistant City Manager Rick Usher, and Sean O'Byrne with the Downtown Council of Kansas City. And guys, I want to know, as we wrap up this conversation, from each of you, just very quickly, if you could introduce one new thought or idea to this public conversation about parking, what would it be?
I would say that we don't have to choose between parking that's easy to find and use, development that is easy to move forward, and having a great place. We can have all of those if we're smart about it.
Rick?
Move downtown and sell your car.
And
ditto to what Rick says, but think multimodal, bikes, streetcars, and sell your car.
And these are the new ideas that Kansas City needs? This is the official stance on parking.
Well, these are great problems to have. You're talking about a rebirth of your central business district, of your downtown, and people are interested in going there. These are good problems.
Sean O'Byrne, best of luck to you and the downtown businesses you represent. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Gina, for having us.
Yeah, thank
and
you so
Rick
much.
Rick Usher, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Thomas Moorfield, it's been great having you. Stay in touch.
Thanks.
You can listen back to this discussion at kcur.org/centralstandard later today.
No parking here, no parking here. This gal belongs to me, no parking here. I met a girl last Sunday, there's a sign upon her door that says to all you fellas, you can't park here no more. No parking here, no parking here. This gal belongs to me, no parking here.
And now it's time for our new series, Leaving Kansas City. For the past few months, we've been hearing stories of how people ended up in Kansas City, but now we're exploring those who have packed their bags and headed elsewhere. Drummer Zach Albetta is originally from Santa Fe. He came to Kansas City for a master's degree at the UMKC Conservatory. He loved this place, especially the music scene.
You know, I was thinking I have gigs, I do a lot of playing, I do a lot of teaching, the cost of living is low. So for a while, yeah, there wasn't really anything calling me anywhere else, really.
But after 7 years here, things changed for Zach. He had just come out of a 2-year relationship. He was in his late 20s and taking stock of his life. That's when he started playing around with the idea of moving to Los Angeles. Here's his story.
The music community, I think, is really encouraging when you get to Kansas City. You know, you show up there and you say, hey, I can do this, this, and this, and I want to play with you guys. And everybody's like, absolutely, man, you're going to do great here. You're awesome. Let's do it. And then when you leave, you say, I want to go to New York. I want to go to L.A. And they're like, man, go for it. You're going to do great. I was just enamored with the glamour of L.A. You know, around every corner is some iconic building or some iconic film studio, even the landscape and the geography. There's, you know, mountains to the east and the ocean to the west, and it's just kind of a feast for the senses. The things that I do not miss about Kansas City are not really Kansas City's fault. I never got used to summers over 100 and winters below zero. I never got used to humidity, and I had the worst allergies of my life in Kansas City. There were definitely moments of doubt musically. There were never moments of doubt personally, because by the time I moved here, I was in a relationship with the person that I ended up marrying, and I knew that just for my personal life, I was in the right place and I was with the right person. But the first year and a half in LA was really it was trying. It was a challenge. It knocked my ego down a lot. I never doubted my own abilities, but it was just intimidating. Just the sheer size of the scene and the sheer number of musicians was intimidating. I had a little bit of doubt about myself stylistically, because a lot of the drummers that I saw, it was apples and oranges. Like, I couldn't compete with them, and I realized that I shouldn't try to compete with them in what they do. You know, I should figure out what it is that I do well and focus on that and do that the best I can, rather than try to, you know, change myself to compete with, you know, someone else's style. And that's a lesson that, you know, musicians are told from a very young age. You know, like, every musician's different. Everybody kind of has their own style. Find out what you do well and do that the best you can. But it wasn't really a lesson that hit home until I moved here. A lot of the music that I played in Kansas City was for art's sake. A lot of the music that I've been playing in LA is for entertainment's sake. It's shifted my approach to the drums. When I was playing a lot of artistic music in Kansas City, I thought of myself as an artist, and you know, my approach was, what can I bring to this music that's unique? What can I bring to this music that only I can do? And in LA, I've begun to think of my approach not as an artist, but as a craftsman. And I'm not thinking about, like, what can I bring to this music that's unique? I'm thinking about, what does this music need? What does this music need me to do? What does this band leader need? What does this singer need? You know, what is required from the drum chair for this music to come off the way it's intended to? One of the reasons I got the gig with the Jennifer Keith Sextet was because the band leader really liked my shuffle. He heard me play a shuffle and he was like, "Yeah, man, you got that Kansas City thing. I dig that." So yeah, I don't have any of the paraphernalia, the hats or the shirts or whatever, and I should. But the way I fly the Kansas City flag, I think is musically.
Zach Albetta works as a professional drummer in LA. And yes, that's him playing the drums in the music you've been hearing. KCUR's Suzanne Hogan brought us the story of why Zach left Kansas City. If you know someone who has an interesting story about leaving Kansas City, let us know. You can contact us at kcur.org. Just click on the Tell KC tab. That's all the time we have for this morning's show. You can continue the conversation about downtown parking on our Facebook page, where you can check out that photo showing just how much of our downtown consists of surface parking. It might shock you. You can also listen back to today's show at kcur.org/centralstandard. We'll have that online later today. Sign up for our podcast while you're there. That web address again, kcur.org/centralstandard.
Tomorrow, we'll be discussing the movie Selma with a movie critic, a community organizer, and filmmaker Kevin Wilmot. Tune in, call up, and add your review to the mix. That's tomorrow at 10. Don't miss it. Central Standard is produced by Sylvia Maria Gross and Matthew Long Middleton. We had lots of help today from Patrick Quick, who captured that photo showing downtown from the top floors of City Hall. I'm Gina Kaufman. That's it for today's show. Stick around for Up to Date. Next.